So we're beginning here on the top of Yudzayin Amud Aleph, four lines down. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Kulan Lipsol. All of them are Psulim. Rabbi Yochanan's commenting on the cities that we had mentioned before, that here are enumerated as the cities where the Aseret HaShvatim ended up. Rabbi Yochanan says, all these cities are enumerated here, they're all Lipsol. And the question is, why they're the Psul? The simplest understanding, and this is what we saw in Rabbi Yochanan's position yesterday, is because they intermarried. And based on the position that we saw yesterday, that an Eved or an Oved Kochavim, Abba Bat Yisrael, produces a Mamzer, then these areas are problematic because they are full of Mamzerim, number one. And number two is that they might be Yisraelim. So they're Yisraelim Mamzerim, which causes a problem in terms of the Chashash of Kiddushin, because they're Jewish, then the Kiddushin would be Tofes. That's number one. And number two is, we have a problem because they're Mamzerim. So if they convert, then they really were Jewish before, but they're Jewish Mamzerim, and that creates a problem for us in terms of Yichus, because we're not allowed to marry into Mamzerim. Rashi adds something interesting. Rashi says afterwards, V'hen lo nizaru, b'nasu ze'achoto b'ito, harihen Mamzerim. Rashi adds on, there's another dynamic over here, that they married relatives, erva, and that's what caused the problem Mamzerim. It might be that Rashi's trying to address that even according to the one who says that an Evan Ovi Kochavim that marries a Bat Yisrael is not a Mamzer, there's still a problem of Mamzerut because of the way they conducted themselves. Independent of the intermarriage issue, just the way they conducted themselves, there's a problem of Mamzerut. So it's a question by why Rashi adds that into Rabbi Yochanan, but it would change why Rabbi Yochanan says they are Lipsul, whether it's because of what we had said in yesterday's daf, Eved, Vovid, Kochavim, that marry a Bat Yisrael, or going to Rashi, that they were not careful about Arayot. Now all this is being told over, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav Asi. So Rav Yehuda is retelling all of this information, and the conclusion that Rav Yochanan says, Ukulan Nepsul, Ki Amreita Kamei De Shmuel. So Rav Yehuda says, when I told this over in front of Shmuel, Amar Li. So this is what he said back to me, Bincha haba min ha-Israelit karui bincha, ven bincha haba min ha-Ovedet kochavim karui bincha ele bina. Says that a child that is born from a Jewish mother is called bincha, is a Jewish child, but a child born from a non-Jewish mother is not considered to be Jewish. This is the source for matrilineal descent, that only through the mother can Judaism be passed down. Comes out of the Pasuk that is found at the end of Parshat Tetchanan in Perek Zayin, Pasuk Gimel. V'lo titchatein bam, do not intermarry with them. Bitcha lo titen livno, do not give your daughter to their son. Ubito lo tikach livenecha, and the daughter don't give over to their son. In either direction, there is a problem of intermarriage. But then the next Pasuk is the key Pasuk, which says, Ki yasir et bincha me'acharai. Vavdu Elohim acherim, b'chara af Hashem b'chem mishmidcha maher. Why don't I want you to do this? Because ki yasir et bincha me'acharai. Because he will cause your son to leave me. Now, the way that Rashi explains it, this is the way that the Ardoresh, the Pasuk, is yasir is in the male form. So ki yasir means a male person is going to call it hasara, is going to cause this deviation, et bincha. So the way that Chazal interpret bincha here does not mean bincha your son, but bincha rather means your grandson. So ki yasir et bincha. The non-Jewish father will cause your grandchild a deviation from the path. He will move him away from Hashem. What they are medayik from here is, the grandchild that comes through your daughter is Jewish. Therefore, there's a problem of ki yasir. The non-Jewish father can cause the child to deviate from the path of Judaism. On the other hand, it does not write ki tasir. Tasir would indicate that it was a woman causing the hasara, and that would mean that a child born from a non-Jewish mother were afraid of that child being taken off the path. That doesn't say that. Why does the Torah not worry about the fact that the non-Jewish mother will take the child off the path? Because he's not Jewish. So therefore he's already gone before ki tasir. So that's the diuk that is learned out of here, ki asir versus ki tasir. And then the reference et bincha, which is not your son, but your grandson. That's the way that Rashi explains it. Then The Gemara continues, Fa'aika banot. What about the girls? All right, you solved the problem in terms of why the intermarriage here did not cause a problem in terms of worried about these people being Jewish, because when your sons went ahead and married these non-Jewish women, the product of that marriage was not Jewish. The Gemara says, Fa'aika banot. What about the Jewish women themselves? What about the Jewish girls? Now, we had the word banot, banot Yushalayim, yesterday, but over here it's talking about the banot of the Aseret HaShvatim, because the Aseret HaShvatim were put into galut, exile to these cities, and that's what we're worried about over here. So here we're worried about the banot of the Aseret HaShvatim who ended up there, and even if they intermarried, the child that resulted from that is Jewish, and therefore there should be a problem. Why is Shmuel saying, don't worry about it? There is something to worry about. There's a worry fact that even if they intermarried, there's a problem if the Jewish girls were intermarrying, that they produced Jewish children. And if you believe that that produces a mamzer, then it's problematic. But even if you don't believe it produces a mamzer, you still have the problem that was brought up before of Amr Yudah Marasi, Ovi Kochavim Shekidesh Bizmanazeh. We worry about the Kiddushin because he's Jewish. There's a possibility he's Jewish. Va'amar Ravina, Shvamina, Ben Bitcha Abba Minawevit Kochavim Karui Bincha, that your grandson that comes from a non-Jewish father is called your child, and therefore, in this case, where the non-Jewish father and a Jewish mother, the child that is born is Jewish. So he says, Gemire, the benato, the audara, it's the ruya, it's taru. There was a mesora that the girls of that generation of the Aseret HaShvatim they put into galut were unable to reproduce, that they did not have children. Question of why? That is a machloket amongst the Rishonim here as to why. Some say that it was intentional. They drank kosi karim. They drank a potion of some sort that caused them to be barren, sterile, that they were unable to bear children because they knew that they were being taken into captivity and they were going to be abused, and therefore they didn't want to have children from those relationships. Others suggest that the Torah Haderech, that the difficult conditions under which they were put into exile, caused them to naturally not be able to bear children. Others even suggest that the fact that they were raped so many times caused it that they didn't have children. I mean, that there are all different explanations amongst the Rishonim as to whether this was intentional or just an unintentional consequence of them being put into galut or what transpired over here. But the Gemara says, Gemiri, we have a Mesora that the girls of that generation did not give birth, and that means that anybody who's in that city is non-Jewish, because the girls didn't bear children, so there's no Jewish offspring because there are no mothers, Jewish mothers, and the boys who intermarried, the product or the offspring of that marriage are non-Jewish, therefore there are no Jewish children there. The one question we have to ask here is Amar Avina. Amar Avina Shma Mina Ben Bitcha Ba Mina Ovid Kochavim Kori Bincha. Avina says, oh, the conclusion is that your grandson that comes through your daughter is Jewish. What did Ravina add that we didn't already know from the previous statement that Ki Amrita Kameh de Shmuel, when they said this in front of Shmuel, and then he said, Bincha ba min Yisraelit koi bincha, ben bincha ba min oved kochavim kori bincha o bina. Here you already have a statement by Shmuel, which seems to indicate that there is matrilineal descent, and then Ravina almost is repeating what he says. For that reason, the Rabbeinu Tam goes ahead and explains Ki Asir differently. He says that Vomer Rabbeinu Tam de Ki Asir abito lo tikach de binchokai. That's going on a case. His daughter don't take for your son. Vachi kamar Ki Asir hachotein et bincha meachorai. Because the father-in-law is going to cause your son, literally your son, to leave me. Vahainu hasara shein azera mityaches achar bincha lachar avodat kochavim. Because it's not going to follow your son, the Yichus, but rather it's going to follow the non-Jewish mother. So the way that he reads it is different. The Ki Asir is not referencing to the grandchild, but rather to the child himself. And Ravina's addition is that, Shma Mino ben bitcha ba min oved kochavim, he says this is the conclusion you would draw about the grandchild. Why is it that you're going to lose your son? Because the new father-in-law is going to take him off the derech. The Rabbeinu Tam later on amends it, because the Reed doesn't like his explanation, and says, okay, you know why Ki Asir, you know why you're going to lose your son? It's because the grandchild is not going to be Jewish. So the son has no reason to stay Jewish because his offspring are also not Jewish. So the statement of Shmuel only goes in a single direction, which is that ki yasirat bincha, your child will be taken off the derech because his children will not be Jewish. But that only tells you that a non-Jewish mother produces non-Jewish offspring. What Ravina comes to tell you is the other side of the picture, which is ben bitcha, the child born to your daughter from a intermarriage, will be Jewish. And that's where Ravina says Shmuel is only telling you about that side according to the Rabbeinu Tam. And then Ravina gives you the other side of the picture. So Rabbeinu Tam reinterprets the ki asir in order to make it that Ravina has some additional chiddush here. Otherwise, Ravina is not adding anything. The way that Rashi learns it doesn't give you any more information than you had before. Because before Shmuel makes a statement that child is Jewish or non-Jewish depending on the mother. And then Ravina really just repeats that with regards to the grandchild. So the way that the Rabbeinu Tam deals with it, it's said that he says the ki asir is referencing your son, not your grandson, which is actually the subject of the psukim there. It's actually the pashtut, the pasuk is ki asir bincha, is referencing your child, not your grandchild. And that's what he says. That's the pashtut of pasuk. But why? Why will it take your child off the derech? Because his offspring are not going to be Jewish. And then Ravina comes along and says, well, then the opposite is true. The fact that we don't worry about your daughter being taken off the derech is because your daughter's children will be Jewish, and therefore she will remain Jewish because she'll want to keep her children who are mityaches achareah Jewish. So that just explains why Ravina, or what Ravina is adding over here. Ike de amrei, ke amrei te kamei de Shmuel, amrei lo zazu misham ad shasum obdei kochavim gmurim. So some say that when they said before Shmuel, they said they didn't leave there until they made them all non-Jewish. Now, why they made them all non-Jewish is not clear here. It is possible that they made them non-Jewish because of what Shmuel's statement before, which is they intermarried. Since they intermarried, they weren't Jewish. And what about the girls? The girls were barren, sterile in that generation. That might be the answer. But then they quote a pasuk which says, Shenemar, Vashem Bagadu, Kivanim Zarim Yaladu. They rejected Hashem because they gave birth to these foreign children. Their intermarriage with foreign children was a rejection of Hashem. And that rejection of Hashem means that they have left the faith. They're no longer a part of the faith. They aren't Jewish. Banim Zarim, foreigners. And Bagadu, they've rejected Hashem. How have they rejected Hashem? They married non-Jewish spouses, had Panim Zarim, foreign children. Foreign children mean that they're not Jewish. And that's why there's no problem here. Now, some Rishonim read this proof as a pasuk that it does not matter. It does not matter whether the intermarriage goes in the direction of the husband or the wife, the spouse, whether it's a male or a female, that the children are considered to be non-Jewish. Because, Bashem Bagadu, if they reject the faith completely, it's one thing to intermarry, which already is a bad enough thing. So, but they intermarry, but they still maintain their Jewish faith, then maybe we could argue that matrilineal descent makes the children Jewish. But some of the Rishonim suggest what Shmuel is saying over here is that if they were mashmid at that time, that they give up their faith, they convert to a different faith and intermarry, that those children, even if it's a Jewish mother, are considered to be non-Jewish because Bashem Bagadu. That there's certain things that can undermine your underlying Jewish yuchus. I mean, that we generally say, once you're Israel forever, and you can't undo that. Here, they're suggesting, based on Shmuel, that that may not be true. Because there's a certain, you can go so far, that maybe you can unwind your Jewish yuchus here, which is Bashem Bagadu. If you reject Hashem, now, by definition, almost, intermarriage is a rejection of Hashem in some way. But here, they're talking about active rejection of Hashem, that if one converts to another religion, and then intermarries, that maybe the children would not be Jewish, even with the Jewish mother. That is the suggestion of some of the Rishonim here, based on what is Shmuel saying. You can see that position quoted in the Meiri and the Karen Ora. Now, what's different about the Ikedamre? The first statement of Shmuel says they're not Jewish, because in the end, either they were Jewish mothers that were then sterile and they didn't have children, or they were non-Jewish mothers and they weren't Jewish. So there were no Jewish children there. The second statement might say that even if the mothers were Jewish, the children were still not Jewish because of this Vashem Bagadu. That's the addition of the second statement. The other statement just may be that they paskined over there that they're all non-Jewish because of the first statement of Shmuel, and that might be the Ikad Amri over here, and that would have big ramifications. Obviously, in the Middle Ages, Rishonim were dealing with people who were converting to religions, some of them under duress, but they were giving up the Jewish faith. What's the status of children born to a woman who converts? Okay, now, Yativ Rav Yosef Achorei de Rav Kahana, Yativ Kahana Kamei de Rav Yehuda. Rav Yosef behind Rav Kahana in front of Rav Yehuda, Yativ Kamar. Atidim Yisrael da'avei Yom HaTova, Kichar Vei Tarmud. Says that when the city of Tarmud is destroyed, Bnei Yisrael are going to make a big party. V'acharif, wasn't it destroyed already? So we missed the chance for the party, if it's already gone. So Hayi Tamud Havai. That's not Tarmud, that's Tamud. It's a different place. V'ashimar, no, Hainu Tarmud. Hainu Tamud, they're the same place. It was the right place. It was Tarmud. Ichpulehu de Michpal. It was... Either the word Ichpulehu de Michpal here means it was replicated, or you can claim that it was doubled. One of the two here, which is Chariv Mechai Gisa, Oti Mechai Gisa. One half of it, or one side of it, was destroyed, but they ended up settling the other side of it. Even though it was destroyed, the other part sprung up to life. Vi Chariv Mechai Gisa, when it gets destroyed on this side, Oti Mechai Gisa, they settle on the other side. It's like the mold that keeps popping up. Bang it down on one side, it pops up on the other side, so that there is this city of Tarmud, even though it seemingly was destroyed, it reappeared on the other side. That's one possibility. Or you could argue that Ichpule Yechpal means that it was doubled, not just because it was two sides, and therefore it was double the size, but literally after it got destroyed on one side, it was double the size on the other side, meaning that it grew even when they rebuilt it on the other side. So now, this place Tarmud is still around. Why are they going to have a party when it's destroyed? It's because the problem of those that are found in Tarmud. The mold is full of these psulim, and because it's full of these psulim, once it's destroyed, then we won't have this chashash of the psulim coming from Tarmud, because it seems to be it was a collection box of these people that are psulim. We're going to see that in a second in the Gemara, and therefore if it got destroyed, we'd be much better off in the sense that we won't have to worry about these individuals. So now, Yativ Rav Amnuna Kamei De'ula, Ve'kahave Shmaitito, Amar Magavro, Magavro, Ilav Daharpanya, Ate. Rav Amnuna is before Ula, and Rav Amnuna is fantastic in his learning. And he says, what a man, what a man. Unbelievable Talmud Chacham here. The only problem is that he comes from this place called Harpanya. So now, Ichsif. Rav Amnuna was a little embarrassed by that. What are the implications of coming from Harpanya? Harpanya have problems with their Yichus. It's a place where there's a lot of Psule Yichus. And he said, Rav Amnuna would have been fantastic. Just the fact that he comes from Harpanya means that there's questionable yichus over here. Samalei, kesef gugul ata aleicha yavet. Where do you give your taxes to? Where do you pay your taxes to? Amalei, the Pumnara. Says that we pay our taxes to Pumnara, that the area or the zone for our taxation zone is Pumnara. Amalei, imkein, mi Pumnara at. Then you came from Pumnara and you don't have to worry about it. Your yichus is just fine. Now, whether he said that just to placate him and to make him feel better, or he really believed that, that depending on where your tax zone was, determined really where you lived, whether it was Pumnara or Harpanya, so then he wasn't from Harpanya, even though he might have been from that area that seemed to be Harpanya. Since he was paying his taxes to Pumnara, he wasn't classified as being from Harpanya. So my Harpanya, what is this Harpanya? Amar Rav Zeira, Har Shakol Ponim Bo. It's a contraction of the word Har and Panya. Panya means to turn. So, a mountain to which all those turn. Now, why does everybody turn to this mountain? It's not because, like Yerushalayim, they're all worshipping the mountain. It's because Kol HaPsulim Holchim L'Sham. Anybody who is Pasul goes over there. Now, whether that is because anybody who is Pasul goes to find someone over there, or it's because they know that that's where all the Psulim belong, and that's where they go, but it's, again, a collection area of Psulim. But it seems to be that if your yichus was questionable or you had problems, you went to Harpanya, nobody asked about your yichus over there. And since there was no checking on yichus over there, it was a place where people who had psulim in their yichus could go and get married, and nobody would ask any questions. But the result of that, obviously, is problematic, which means the place is full of psulim, and we can't trust anybody who's from that area in terms of yichus. But Matnita Tano, in the Braita, we have Koshein Makir, Mishpachto v'shivto. Anybody who doesn't know his family or his shevet, Nifne l'sham goes over there. Question is, what did the Braita add that wasn't already said here in Rabbi Zeira's statement? So some suggest that the difference between them is Harsha called ponim bo, which was maybe in the past, but near here, Nifne l'sham is that they will go in the future. The Braita adds that not only did people in the past go there, but that's the suggestion for someone who has the problem now should go there because there's a shidduch for them in that area. That might be the addition of what's mentioned over here. Or the Braita is just suggesting that these are people who have questionable yichus versus Rabbi Zeru, who says these people are psulim mamash. Amar Rava, v'yamuka mishol, and it's even deeper than sheol. It's a question here what the word sheol means. Generally, the word sheol means gehinom. So this place, Arpanya, is even deeper than gehinom. I mean, it's worse than gehinom because people there are creating more and more psulim, and psule yichus, and intermarriage, and all the things that are going on over there, which is terrible. It's even worse than gehinom. The Gemara will explain why in a second. Or, over here, Tosafot brings that the possibility that the word sheol over here actually refers to Bavel. Bavel, which was a low-lying area, was called Sheol, and therefore it's deeper than Bavel. And we'll see in a second why that is. Shenemar, miad Sheol efdem, mimavet egalim. From Sheol, from Gehenim, I will redeem them. Mimavet, from death, I will save them. I will bring them to salvation. Vilu psul didhu leiluhu takanto. But these psulim have no takanta, they will not be fixed. So you end up in Gehinom, there's a chance that you can get out, there's a chance that Hashem will take care of you. But you end up over here, these psulim are permanent, and therefore once you end up over there, there's no fixing whatever is transpiring over here. So that's why it's deeper than Sheol. That's one way to learn it. I'll tell you how to learn the Bavel side of it afterwards. So psule de Harpanya, mishum psule de Mishon. So the psulim in Harpanya came out of Mishon, which is a city that was nearby. Seems to be these areas or these cities are in the southeast areas of Bavel, somewhat east of the Jewish settlement in Bavel. So east to southeast of the Jewish settlement in Bavel. Upsule de Meshon, Mishum Psule de Tarmod. And the problematic people in Meshon came out of Tarmod. And Psule de Tarmod, Mishum Abde Shlomo. The problem in Tarmod, we mentioned in yesterday's daf, was because of the Abadim of Shlomo, who ended up over there, who were either Abadim or non-Jews, and they were intermarrying and causing Mam Zerut. So that's the problem that we have over there. So we see here that there was a movement, or it seems to be that the Psul started in the Tarmod, then moved to Meshon and then to Harpanya, whether that means that they physically moved, or because of their proximity, there was intermarriage that caused a smaller city that had a problem, then caused a bigger and bigger city to have problems along the way here, but it seems that the problem rolled and moved. And V'hainu Damrei Inche, this is what people say, Kaba Rabba V'Kaba Zuta, you have a big measure and a small measure, M'gander V'Azil L'Shol, they roll down to, well, we use Shol here mean Gehinom, U'Mishol L'Tarmod, and from Gehinom they move to Tarmod, Mitamor L'Meshan U'Mimeshan Arpanya, which is just telling you the problem is moving. It's not, a problem doesn't stay stationary, it rolls downhill. And downhill, Gehinom is low, and then you go lower and lower until you get to the worst place, which is Harpanya, which we mentioned before, is this area where they collected everybody who had problems with their yichus or psulim, they all ended up in this Harpanya. So here it's heading down. Now, what the mashal, or the colloquialism means, is that you have a big measure and a small measure, which are both incorrect or problematic. And they keep rolling. They roll down to Sheol, that lands a person in Gehinom. But that's not the lowest place. From Gehinom, it goes to this, 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 and this place, which is saying that these places are lower than Gehinom. That's one way to learn the Mashal. The other way that Tosafot brings here, that Sheol is referring to Bavel, means Kavarabba v'Kavaktano. Everybody was put into exile to Bavel. The Kavarabba, those people that had Yichus, those people that were Gedolim and Tehorim, as well as the Kavaktano, the small people, the people who were Psulim, they all ended up in Bavel. Once they ended up in Bavel, Sheol, which refers to Bavel, then they moved over to Tarmod, and then Tarmod to Meshan, and then Meshan to Harpanya, which means that those Psulim that came into the exile eventually ended up being sequestered or concentrated in Harpanya. because they moved. They started out in Babel, coming, everybody was exiled, so Absalom came along, but slowly but surely they ended up in these places. That might have to do with what Gemara says, that Ezra made sure when he left Babel to go back to Eretz Yisrael, they cleaned out all the Psalim from there. That he made sure that he left nobody Pasul behind, because he felt going back to Eretz Yisrael, that was going to become the main religious center, and therefore he didn't want to leave the Psalim behind. He took them with him back to Eretz Yisrael, or, according to this version, he made sure that they weren't amongst the general populace. They were segregated into these cities, or they were only in these cities. Once he left, there were no Psalim amongst the core population that was in Bavel. Okay, so there's two different ways to learn what the word Sheol means over here, whether it means Gehinom or Bavel, but it's clear here that they had knowledge of the fact that these cities were problematic in terms of their yichus. Again, whether it was a problem of intermarriage or a problem of mamzerut, one of the two, and therefore people avoided marrying individuals from there, and converts from those areas were also problematic because they might have been Jewish, just mamzerim, and therefore we may not accept converts from that area, and kiddushin of someone from that area might also be problematic, in that there are all the problems that we mentioned before that might be generated out of these locations. And with that, we finish the first parak. Now, the second parak, even though it's called the second parak, really just continues the first parak, which is Ketzad. Our first Mishnah said that there's certain examples in the Mishnah, and then the first Mishnah gave you examples of those situations, of those circumstances. And here, our Mishnah mentioned a Ishid Achiv Shaloaya Ba'olam. It's a case where you have Yibam, where two brothers are not alive at the same time, and that is a problem in terms of Yibam. There's no Yibam if they're not in the world at the same time. So the Mishnah says, Ketzad, Eshet Achiv Shelo Yah Ba'olamo. What is the scenario of Eshet Achiv Shelo Yah Ba'olamo? Shnei Achim, you have two brothers, Umeit Echad Mehem. One of them passes away, V'nola Dehenach. And then another, a third brother is born. After the first brother passes away, a third brother is born. You have Ruvain, Shimon, and Levi. Ruvain passes away before Levi is born. Levi is only born after the passing of Ruvain. Ba'acharkach, Yibei Masheni et Eshet Achiv. Ruvain passed away without having any children, and he has his wife available for Yibum. As far as Shimon is concerned, he was alive when Ruvain was alive. He performs Yibum with this woman, Umeit. And then Shimon dies. Shimon dies, and now he leaves his wives to Levi. One of those wives that he's leaving to Levi is originally Ruvain's wife, the one that he performed Yibum with. Harishuna yotza mishum Eshet Achiv, shelo haya be'olamo. The woman who was married to Reuven originally, and Shimon performed Yibum with, she goes out because Levi never was together with Reuven in the world. This is according to the Shita of the Chachamim, who say that Eshet Achiv Shelo Hayah Ba'olamo applies even if Levi was alive with Shimon. They were alive at the same time. And this might go even according to Rabbi Shimon, who says that if Levi is born before Shimon performs Yibum on the woman, it's also problematic. So even Rabbi Shimon will agree in this Mishnah, according to most, Rabbi Shaya disagrees, but according to most, Rabbi Shimon will agree in this Mishnah that this is problematic because he was born while she was still available from Reuven. So even according to Rabbi Shimon, this is problematic, and Levi may not marry that woman because she was once married to Reuven, and she came, fell to Yibum when Levi was alive in the world. Levi was born while she was still waiting to perform Yibum with Shimon. Vashniya mishum tzarata. And the co-wife of Shimon is exempted from Yibum because the first wife was an Erva, so she becomes a co-wife to an Erva, Tzarat Erva. Asaba Mamaru mate. If Shimon, before he performed Yibum with her, did Mamar, we've discussed this before, this is Kiddushim Derabanan in the context of Yibum, so he performed Kiddushim with her, Umeit, and then he dies. Then, Shnia Choletzit Velo Mitya Bemet. Then when the two wives fall to Levi, Levi has to perform chalitza on the co-wife. Because Yibum was really never performed. Reuven passed away without children. Shimon, had he married the Reuven's wife and performed Yibum with her, then she would have been a full-fledged wife. And then if Shimon passes away without children, Levi would not perform Yibum with this woman, because Zeshet Achim Shelo Be'olam, and her co-wife would be exempt as a tzarata erva. So that's a simple case. But over here, Shimon didn't fully take her as a wife. He only took her as a wife through Mamar, which means Kiddushim. He didn't consummate the Yibum. Since he didn't consummate the Yibum, she never became a full-fledged wife of Shimon. Then when Shimon passes away without children, the quote-unquote co-wives, they're not really co-wives because he never fully married the Yivama, then that co-wife over here is really the only real wife of Shimon. Since the only real wife is Shimon, then Levi could perform Yibum with her. They were alive at the same time. He could perform Yibum with her. But we say du chalitza, not Yibum. Even though technically you could do Yibum because midrabanan. Midrabanan, Reuven's wife was married to Shimon through Mamar. And so therefore we're not going to let you, Levi, perform Yibum with this co-wife because otherwise it looks bad then. It looks like they were co-wives really married to Shimon. And even though it's Sarat Erva, Levi's going ahead and performing Yibum with her. So we don't want that. The optics are not good. So therefore we say, if Mamar was performed, even though there was no consummation of the Yibum by Shimon, nevertheless, if they now fall to Levi, Levi has to perform Chalitza, no Yibum. Chalitza, because Midoraita, there's only one wife to Shimon, and Levi should have to perform Yibum with her. But Chalitza, not Yibum, because it looks bad, because he had already performed Mamar with Reuven's wife, making it look like he had two wives before they fell to Levi. Okay, now, Amar Rav Nachman. Mandatani Rishona lo Mishtabesh. Mandatani Shnia lo Mishtabesh. Our Mishnah has the Girsa of Rishona, you see in it. The Mishnah says, Shimon passes away. HaRishona Yotza Mishum Ejri. First one goes and leaves. Our Girsa in the Mishnah is Rishona. He says, if you have the Girsa of Rishona, it's fine. If you have the Girsa of Shnia, it's also fine. Mandatani Rishona, like our Mishnah. If it says Rishona, like our Mishnah says, lo Mishtabesh. My Rishona, Rishona Lenefila. She was the first one that fell to Yibum. This is Reuven's wife. Reuven's wife was the first one to become a Yivama because of the death of Reuven. Then after she marries Shimon and Shimon passes away, both wives of Shimon then fall to Yibum. But who was the first one to be a Yivama? Reuven's wife. And she's the one that causes the exemption over here. Because she's Eshet Achiv Shlo Yabolomom. Matatani Shnia Lo Mishtabesh. The one that says that it references the second one also doesn't make a mistake. My Shnia. Shnia Lenisuin. She is the second one to be married. Meaning that Shimon was already married. Reuven passes away without children. His wife falls to Yibum to Shimon, and Shimon's miyabim her. Who's the second wife here? The second wife here is the Yivama. The wife of Reuven is his second wife. So that's what it means to Shnia. Where it says, Milo askina di Yibim v'achakach kanas. How do you know that's the order? The order could be the other way around. It could be that Shimon performed Yibum with Reuven's wife, and then afterwards took a second wife. So who says the Shnia, or the second wife, was the Yivama? The second wife could be some independent woman here. It's Elamai Shnia, Shnia bin Nisuin. This is her second marriage. Meaning that she was once married to Reuven, and now she's married to Shimon. So she was married twice, and that's what produced her as a Yivama, as opposed to the co-wife, who was only married to Shimon, and that's what generating her as a Yivama. So that's what it means here. Shnia bisnim, that she was married two times. Once to her husband, and then once to the Yabam. And now she's ending up being a Yivama to Levi, except for the fact that Levi is Eshet Achiv Shlo Yah Be'Odomo. So as he says, if the Girsa is Rishona or Shnia, we can explain it that it's referencing this woman who is Eshet Achiv Shlo Yah Be'Odomo. That is correct. The assumption here is that even after the performance of Yibum with Reuven's wife, she still has a connection to Reuven. Now, the Chachamim definitely believe that. They believe that even if Levi is born only after Shimon has married her, they still believe that. For Rabbi Shimon, that is a little bit questionable. Rabbi Shimon says, if Levi is performed before Shimon performs even with her, you're right, that she has the taint, quote-unquote, of Reuven on her. Whereas, if Levi is only born after Shimon performs even for her, according to Rabbi Shimon, then she's a full-fledged wife of Shimon, and it's not Eshet Achiv Shlo Yah Be'Odomo. And Rabbi Shimon views that differently, that Reuven is pulled out of the picture then. So that was, as we explained earlier, that might be the machloket between Rabbi Shimon and the Chachamim as to how much residual is there from Reuven inside of this marriage. The Chachamim believe clearly that there is a residual, and that's what's causing the problem. Rabbi Shimon says there is no residual, but if Levi was around before Shimon formed Yibum, then he met her while she was still connected to Reuven, and that's what causes the problem. Not when she's married to Shimon, but the fact that he was around when she was still connected to Reuven. Right, so now the Gemara says, Eshet Achiv Shlo Yah Be'Odomo Hechativa. This concept of Eshet Achiv Shlo Yah Be'Odomo, where do we know that it's problematic by Yibum? So we discussed this in the introduction to the Masechta, which is Amar Yehuda, Amar Kral, the pasuk says, Ke Yishvu Achim Yachdav. When brothers live Yachdav together, Yachad Be'Odomo, they're in the same time. Shaitalem Yeshiva Achad Bolam, that they live together at the same time in the world. Prat, they should achiv shaloyo bolamo. Yachdav miyuchadim benachala. We learn out of the word yachdav that they have to be miyuchad benachala, that they share a common nachala. Prat achiv minaim. That comes to exclude a brother through a mother. meaning only brothers through the father perform Yibum, not brothers through the mother. He learns that out of the word Yachdav. On the other hand, Rabba Amar, Achin Men Av Yalif Achva Achva Mibnei Yaakov. We don't have to learn that out of Yachdav. We can learn that out of the Gzeir Shova. Over here it says, Ki Yeshvu Achim Yachdav. And by Yaakov Avinu it says, by the children when they're going down to Mitzrayim, it says, Shnei Masar Achim Bnei Avinu. We are 12 brothers, sons of our father. Over there, the word Achim is unnecessary. They could just say, Shnei Masar Bnei Avinu. We are 12 sons of our father. Why do they say Achim, that we're brothers? The Gemara says that Achim Achim is the Gzeir Shavah, to teach you just like by Bnei Yaakov. The children of Yaakov are only brothers through the father. And that's what makes them brothers. So over here, the Achim, the word here, the definition of Achim is brothers through the father. Malala and Minav velo Minaim, just like by Bnei Yaakov, it's only common, they share a common father. Avkan Minav velo Minaim. Also, just a common father and not a common mother, and that teaches us by the case of Yibum that Achim means brothers. And then Yachdav, then we'll use the word Yachdav to teach us that they were together in the world, that they lived at the same time, Yeshiva Achad Bonomo. So over here you have two limudim out of the Pazuk. Number one is they have to be together in the world, if they live together, which is Eshet Achim Shalom Be'olamo, is disqualified from Yibum. And number two is that Yibum was only performed with brothers through the father, not brothers through the mother. So those are the two limudim. So just a question of where we learn out brothers through the father from. Do we learn out from the Pasuk itself, because the word Yachdav? Or you learn out of Gzer Shava Achim Achim? Where it says, V'leilif Achva Achva Ma'arayot. Why don't you learn out of Gzer Shava Achim from Arayot? Because there it uses the word Achicha. And it says that you are precluded from Ishit Achicha, your brother's wife is precluded. And there, brother's wife is precluded, no matter whether he's your brother from the father, or the brother through the mother. So, Danim Achim Me'achim, Vein Danim Achim Me'achicha. Over there it says, Ishit Achicha, talks about Erba, using the word Achicha. Over here we use the word Achim. So Achim and Achim by Bnei Yaakov is the same word. But there by Arayot, it's Achicha versus Achim. Where it says, My Nafkamina, why does it make a difference? V'ha'atana debay Rabbi Shmuel, the Gemara brings this up every time. It has a Gzer Shova that doesn't fit exactly. There, by the case of Tzarat, the Tana debay Yisrael learns a Gzer Shova of a Shav HaKohen Uba HaKohen, and they say that's a Gzer Shova, even though the word is Shav Uba. So despite the fact that the words are different, they're still willing to learn out a Gzer Shova. This is as to how many weeks they have to wait B'Skira for Tzarat. Again, it's not important to our topic, but that's what's learned out over there. Zoe Shiva, Zoe Bia. Shiva and Bia are exactly the same. It says, Hani Milecha Daleka Mide de Domile. Over there, there's nothing else to make the Gzera Shova with, so we use words that are not exactly the same. They have a similar meaning. The Shiva and Bia is the coming of the Kohen and leaving of the Kohen, which is about the same individual, the same issue, so therefore we can make the Gzera Shova. But, Avalhecha Deika Mide de Domile, Mide Domile Yafinan. If we have a choice between picking Achim Achim versus Achim Achicha, we're obviously going to give precedence to Achim Achim, which is a much better Gzera Shova. Where it says, V'leilif Achva Achva Milot. All right, so I'll find you a different case. By Lot, Diktiv Ki Anashim Achim Anachnu. We are brothers. Now, obviously Lot and Avraham are not brothers. Lot is his nephew, because Lot is the son of his brother. So since Lot is the son of his brother who passed away, that's why Lot tags along with Abraham, because his father Haran had passed away. So Lot ben Haran, Haran is the brother of Abraham, Lot is the nephew of Abraham. So now, what would that suggest? That if you say Achim Achim, that Yibum would apply to an uncle's wife. If the uncle passes away, then you have to perform Yibum with the uncle's wife. That would be the implications of using the word Achim over here from Lot. So here we have the word Achim Achim. You want to make a Gzer Shava? I got a Gzer Shava for you from Lot. The Gemara says, Mistavra b'bnei Yaakov avel lemelef, mishum demufne. Makes more sense to learn out b'nei Yaakov, because there the word Achim is extraneous. Midhavale lemichtav shneim asar avadecha b'nei Avinu. They could have just skipped the word Achim in the Pasuk and just said, we are 12 individuals, your servants, the sons of one father. Div Achim. And it still reads the word Achim, which is extraneous. Shmanina lefnuye. That's to leave it extraneous, to teach you that's where you make the Gzer Shava. Where it says, V'itzrich the Michtav Achim, V'itzrich the Michtav Yachdav. They had to write the word Achim and write the word Yachdav. Why? Because the Ikatav Rachman Achim, Hava Mina Lelef, Achva Achva Milot. And I would have thought, learn out Achim Achim from Lot. Where it says, V'chitem alo mutne. So now, what do you mean? Why would I have thought to learn out of Lot? You just proved to me that there's no reason to learn out of Lot, because Achim by Bnei Yaakov is extraneous. By Lot, it's not extraneous. Gemara says, lie! Afnuye mufne! No, really! Truthfully, it is extraneous. You should have written the word re'im over there. He could have just said, Avram says, ki anashim achim anachnu. You could have written, ki anashim re'im anachnu. That's the meaning of the word achim over there. The word over there, achim, does not mean we're really brothers. It means that we are re'im. We are friends. So, uchtim, achim. Since it used the word achim instead of re'im, that makes it extraneous. And therefore, it would have been available for the gzeres shava. Shema minal, afnuye. So therefore, it was available for gzeres shava. So now I have competition. Achim, I could have learned out of Bnei Yaakov. Achim, I could have learned out of Lot and Abraham. Both of them are extraneous, and both of them can teach me. How do I know which one to use? Katev Rachmana Yachdat. The Yachdat comes to teach you, I'm Yuchadim in Achala. Those that are Yuchad in Achala. V'katev Rachmana Yachdav. Had the Torah just written Yachdav, which would have been Yuchadim in Achala. Have a meaning in Yachdei Ba'abu Ma'ima. Fred, this is your question. That Yachdav means that they have to have both a mother and a father that are in common in order to perform Yibum. Tzricha, therefore I need Achim of Bnei Yaakov to teach me just from the father's side. Where it says, where would you ever think that you have to have a mother and a father in common? Yibum benachla tala rachmana. The Yibum has a din in Nachla. We're going to get to that later on. It's not so important now, but the fact is that Yakum Hashem Achiv, that he will step into his brother's shoes. The Gemara learns that he steps into his brother's shoes, not only in terms of the child that is born, but also in terms of Nachla. He gets all the possessions of his brother. He gets the inheritance of his brother. So you see that Yibum revolves around inheritance. Inheritance, Nachla min Av, lo min Aim. That we know already, because Nachla only comes through the father, not through the mother. But it says, Itzrich. Sakadat chaminaho v'chidushu. This whole parsha of Yibum is a chidush. Why? The mishtari erva gabe. We're allowing him to marry somebody who is otherwise an erva. So I would have thought, because of that, we are going to be very stringent about the relationship. The only time we're going to let you override erva is when your common parents are both from the mother and the father's side, because then I know for sure you're a brother. You know, you're a real brother that way. And then I would have said Yibum is only performed in that case. Tricha, that's what I learned out of the Achim from Bnei Yaakov. So I have two limudim. In the end, the Gemara says, I need both of the limudim. I need Achim to teach me that it's brothers through the father, but I also need Yachdav to teach me that it's not the Achim of Lot, which would have meant that it was an uncle and a nephew, but rather the Achim of Bnei Yaakov. Had I just learned out of Yachdav, I would have thought both parents have to be in common. Achim of Bnei Yaakov teaches me only the father has to be in common. So we end up using both Limudim to get to the conclusion. Now, what's interesting in the end is the Achim of Bnei Lot seems to be extraneous, the way the Gemara is explaining it. So many of the Rishonim explain that the Achim of Bnei Lot is not really extraneous. In the end, the Gemara had it as a Havamina, it was extraneous. But in the end, Achim implies a relationship of peers. This is very important, because the word Achim does appear in Sefer Breishit in a number of locations, not in the context of brothers, real brothers. One of them is here by Avram and Lot, and when he says, Ki anashim anachim anachnu, that's not only a idea of friendship or closeness, it's also an acknowledgement of peer, that they are now on the same level. We see that later on in the end of Parshat Vayetze. I'll just bring you another example of that. At the end of Parshat Vayetze, when Yaakov is running away from Lavan, at the end there it says that they draw up a brit, a covenant between them, by Yegar Saduta, and then it says over there that Yaakov called his brothers to eat with him. Yaakov doesn't have any brothers. So what brothers is he speaking about over there? So Rashi, the word brother shows up twice. Rashi interprets it differently. In one case he says, Achim means the family, Lavan, and all the people with him. The next time he says the word Achim means his sons. That his sons were his Achim. What do you mean his sons are his Achim? Clearly his sons are not his brothers. But what is being indicated there is his sons have now grown up, and now they become peers with Yaakov. They have a peer relationship over there. And that's what Achim means. We find it also when Yaakov goes to the house of Lavan, also the term Achim is used over there, even though they're not brothers. The word Achim appears in Sefer Bereishit to mean a peer relationship rather than simply brothers. And that might be why you had to use the word Achim. Had you just used the word Re'im, it would just indicate a relationship, a friendship. Achim is a much stronger statement not of just friendship, but of peers. The people that are now viewed as peers, whereas the relationship before was not of peers. For instance, Yaakov and his sons were not peers. They are father and son. But eventually, the sons reach a point where they are peers. Same thing here. Lot and Abraham did not start out being peers, but it seems to be over here, and there's what to say about this in the beginning of Lech Lecha, that they've now reached a relationship of peers, and something's changed. And the same thing is true with Yaakov and Lavan. Yaakov thinks he's a peer with Lavan, and he comes in and says that we are Achim. When he tells Rachel that we are brothers, he refers to Lavan as being a peer. In the end, he finds out he's not such a peer to Lavan, because Lavan swings him around and swindles him, until Yaakov finally figures out how to deal with Lavan. But in the beginning, he thought himself as a peer, and he finds out a mistaken understanding of peership. Tosafot here asks a very interesting question, and says, why do we need these psukim at all? For Eshet Achiv Shelo Haya Ba'olam, we should just learn it out of Derachea Darchei Noam, which means that the ways of the Torah are always pleasant. And here is a possibility that a woman would be a Yavama. There are no brothers to marry her, so she goes off and gets married because there's no Yavam. Then years later, her mother-in-law has another child, and now she'd be stuck because Eshet Achiv Shelo Haya Ba'olam now is a problem for her, and she was married in the interim and she should have waited. We're not going to ask a woman to, first of all, worry about the possibility that children will be born in the future, or to have no knowledge as to whether there is a Yabam or not have a Yabam. So the Ri says in the end that we do itztriach lehecha dechamota sheyavama muberet. There are manifestations of cases where there's no issue of derche derche noam, but where her mother-in-law is already pregnant. So she knows that there's a future yabam coming along, and then she knows to wait, so it won't be a problem. And that's what we need the limud for, to teach us that eshet achiv shelo haya ba'olam does not apply in that instance. Which is very interesting, because he sees the waiting for that yabam, who's significantly younger, to be okay in terms of yibum and that not being a problem of derche derche noam. On the other hand, if she got married not knowing that there's possibly a future yabam, that would be something that would be unacceptable. Am Rav Huna Amar Rav, Shomeret Yabam Shemeta Mutar Bi'ima. A yivama that is waiting to perform yibum and then passes away. The yibum is never performed. Reuven has a wife, passes away without children, and now his wife is waiting to perform yibum with Shimon. Before Shimon performs yibum with her, she passes away. What is being said here by Rav Huna Amar Rav is, this Yabam can marry her mother. He has no relationship with this woman. He never married her, even though there was a possibility that she could have been his Yivama, but it never was carried out. Therefore, she never becomes an Erva. She's not an Erva, then he's Mutar to marry her mother. Alma Kazavar Ein Zika. What's clear from here is that he thinks there's no Zika. Zika is this terminology, we'll have to define it more and speak about it more, but Zika is this idea that when the Yivama is available for Yibom, there's a quasi-connection between the Yabam and the Yavama, even before they actually consummate the Yibum. Means that they were quasi-married, even beforehand. So what's clear from this statement is, Ein Zika. Because if there was a Zika, you'd have a problem of Erva. He wouldn't be able to marry the mother because they were quasi-married beforehand. The Lema Alocha Gedivei Omer Ein Zika. So just say the Alocha is like the one who says, Ein Zika. Ihava Omer Hachi, if he just said this, Havamina Hani Mili Betray. That's only when they're two brothers. When there are two brothers, meaning Reuven passes away, and there's Shimon and Levi, both of whom can perform Yibum with this woman. That's when there's no Zika. Why? Because each one of them could do it, so you can't say there's a Zika to both of them. But B'chad, if there was only one brother, Yesh Zika, then we would say there's Zika. So V'leim Aloch, G'divi Omer, Ein Zika, Filu B'chad. You can clarify that. Just say the Aloch is like one who says Ein Zika, even by one, even when there's one brother there. Imar Achi, Avamina, Filu Mechayim. I would think even while she's still alive. Kamash Malon, Acharmita in Michaim Lo. That only after the Yavama passes away is that true. When she's alive, that's not the case. Mishom, Tasur Levatel Mitzvah Yavamim. Because otherwise, if in the interim, for instance, here Reuven passes away, Shimon has the opportunity to perform Yibum with his wife. But instead he goes ahead and marries her mother. So that's Mutar in terms of Erva. But what now happens? If he marries her mother, he can no longer perform Yibum with the daughter. So what he's doing is he's removing or he's knocking out the mitzvah of Yibum. So that's what's problematic over here. I would have thought that if I just said Alocha, there is no Zika, that would imply that ain't Zika even when she's alive. No, the answer is when she's alive, even though there's no Zika, there's still a problem of marrying an Erva because you'll preclude her from performing Yibum. After she passes away, then there's no Yibum, mitzvah Yibum left, then you can go and marry any of the Arayot because you were never married to this woman. Tanan, Vimto, Shemeta, Mutar Bachuta, a Yavama that passes away, you're mutar to marry the sister. Bachata in the sister, yes, bi'ima lo, but her mother not. So hu adin dafilu bi'ima. No, that's true even with the mother. So then why did the Mishnah, this is a Mishnah later on Daf Memtet, why does the Mishnah say or give an example that if the Yevama passes away, you can marry the sister? Could have given an example, you could marry the mother. Why is it only giving an example of the sister? Where it says, V'adid tani reisha ishto, shemeta. The first case in the Mishnah is talking about a real marriage. A husband that's married to a woman, if his wife passes away, or the ex-wife passes away, he can marry the sister. There, it's only mutar b'chota, b'chota in, avo b'imalo. There, that's only true by the sister, not true by the mother. Tabila yisura doraita. Because there, the mother is a real erva. He's married to this woman, he can't marry the mother even after she passes away. Tananami Seifa, the next stanza or piece in the Mishnah, which is referencing a Yibum, they just wrote Mutar b'achuta. They used the same example as they used by a wife, it's only true by achuta. So then when they got to Yibum, they mentioned achuta, even though achuta is not the sole erva that could do it, even Ima, even the mother, according to what we said here. It's not coming to exclude other arayot, it's just coming to keep parallel structure in the Mishnah, and that's why it mentions that you can marry the sister when the Yevama passes away, and not marry the mother. Okay, we'll stop over here, 6 lines from the bottom of Yud Zayin Amud Bet.